You've been listening to Pete Seeger in his own words and song. He died in 2014 at the age of 94. For a copy of today's show, you can go to our website at democracynow.org and go there to watch all of our Pete Seeger shows, including his 90th birthday celebration featuring Bruce Springsteen and Bernice Johnson Reagan and Joan Baez. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Aaron Mate, Nermeen Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Sam Alkoff, Hani Massoud, Robbie Karen, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield, Messiah Rhodes, and Sharina Nadura. Mike DeFilippo and Miguel Noguera are our engineers. Special thanks to Becca Staley and Julie Crosby. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
This is WHFR Dearborn. And now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal, local news and alternative views for Dearborn and the surrounding area. We're live in the studio today, and it is Friday, July the 3rd. Not Labor Day yet. No, not quite, but a lot of people are getting a head start. So remember, if you're leaving town and want to hear WHFR this weekend, we're on the internet, of course, from WHFR.fm, any place you can get a Wi-Fi signal or a direct computer connection, maybe on your smartphone even, you can listen to WHFR, because you don't want to leave your hometown sound behind just because you're sitting on a lake somewhere in northern Canada. And the person who so generously laughed to that revelation is my co-host, John Conroy. How are you, John?
Very good, Jay. Happy 4th coming up.
Yes. I was mentioning to you earlier, just thinking about it, we always talk about major holidays here and sometimes debunk some mistaken information that people have, some myths that are not true of each holiday. But I think the 4th of July is certainly one of my most favorite holidays of the couple dozen every year, the big ones. Might even tie or best out Christmas in my mind, because Christmas is so much a swirl of just materialism back and forth and not so much spirit. The 4th of July is pretty straightforward, although most people are just celebrating in general our flag and patriotism without quite understanding what the 4th of July was all about originally, the Declaration of Independence, which we'll talk about in a second. So here comes my little news that I got about the 4th of July. Okay, first of all, the actual approval of the Declaration of Independence happened on July the 1st, yes, 1776. But the big day was ratifying the text on July the 4th, and then they issued the Declaration of Independence in several different forms. It was printed as a sort of a broadside that was widely distributed and read to the public. It's like a handout, broadside. And the source copy used for this printing has been lost and may have been a copy in Thomas Jefferson's hand even. Jefferson's original draft, complete with the changes made by John Adams and Benjamin Franklin, and Jefferson's notes of changes made by Congress, are preserved at the Library of Congress. The best-known version of the Declaration, a signed copy that's popularly regarded as the official document, is displayed at the National Archives, Washington, D.C. This engrossed copy, as they call it, was ordered by Congress on July 19th and signed primarily, and there's a dispute among historians, on August 2nd. So, but we do know that there was some copy that was officially adopted and signed by someone, at least John Hancock, on July the 4th, even though there was various versions that were approved before that. And so most people are aware of that. July the 4th is a date we can all get around, even if a couple of the people signed that bigger document, or one person, we think, signed it as late as November 2nd of that year, wasn't even elected to Continental Congress yet. But they said, okay, you're elected later and you want to sign it, go ahead. What the heck? You know, if you like that, go sign it. So here's a little bit about the signing itself, other than the date these things happen. Of course, the largest signature and the most famous signature is that of John Hancock. Now, he was actually the president of the Continental Congress, and people believe he did sign first, and his large flamboyant signature became iconic. In other words, hey, put your John Hancock on this. People still say, I think, somewhat, which means your big signature, you know. And he wrote it very, very clearly, and the whole idea was, supposedly, he said, after he signed, so the British ministry can read that name without spectacles. By golly, this is a message to England, and I want them to know who I am.
As clear as possible.
Uh-huh. And another quote that he's supposedly declared, a slightly different one, was, there, I guess King George will be able to read that. Okay. And of course, John Hancock, my last point here, supposedly also said that Congress, having signed the Declaration, that is the Continental Congress, we didn't have this system of government until we had a constitution. And that didn't come until, if I'm not mistaken, 1789. So we had to fight the war and everything. We didn't really know how we were going to organize ourselves in a new government until after the war with England. But this started it, of course, his Declaration of Independence. We want to be independent of England. But it's kind of interesting. We didn't know how we were going to become a country, a government. And certainly we had really no idea beforehand when we got into this. We were still just 13 colonies. And they were just adding representative sent, and they would vote, and I guess majority rule, and that was pretty much it.
Well, we sure didn't think we were going to beat England militarily either, because we didn't have much to fight with.
No. Yeah, but of course that was really...
I'm just saying it would do it with peaceful means rather than over
military. Right, well, they were hoping that maybe England would just say, okay, you're a long ways away, and we don't really want to go through the expense of having a battle with you, and so go ahead. You know, but they did expect, and this is the other John Hancock comment here. He said to Congress, after having signed the Declaration, Congress, he said, you must now all hang together. And Benjamin Franklin replied, yes, we must indeed all hang together, or most assuredly, we shall all hang separately. But that quotation did not appear in print until more than 50 years after Franklin's death, interestingly. So I'm not sure if that means we can't legitimize it, or, you know, people didn't want to put that spin on him that he was that negative. In other words, we're surely all going to be rounded up, just us, right, you know, by the militia, and hung for treason. That's really, they were quite brave to write this. They didn't just write this and think, oh, we got a big army, big militia, and we'll fight and defend ourselves. They all just thought after they wrote this, and they thought this is the way it should go, probably England would just gather them up, since their names were on the document, and kill them all, hang them all. And so, and I think that would have put a little bit of a damper on the revolution, that sort of negativism of that comment. And but I think it was very, very brave if he did say it. And certainly that was the thought there, was that everyone that signed the document from the Continental Congress, and I think everyone in Congress did eventually one time or the other sign it. The how many was that? The parchment copy on August 2nd, 1776, had 56 persons who signed it. And that seems like a pretty good number. I don't remember how many representatives came from each Continental Congress, or whether they had representatives from like other bodies too. I really haven't read or studied, and I took all those history courses, much about the actual organization of the Continental Congress, because that, of course, didn't become our manner of government just a few years after, and that's what you study, is what we have really today. Three branches of government, and the number of representatives, senators, House of Representatives, and the details on presidency, and so on. So anyway, I think it's a very bold thing, and good for John Hancock writing a big, clear legible signature. How many people do that anyway? You know, and, but especially because it seems like he said, and there's different quotes, but basically the same thing. He didn't want to leave, didn't want to make it hard for any of those British authorities to see his name. He was proud to sign that document. So.
Well, in history, read back in history, and you think of England being more worried about the Indians rather than our Americans, because the Indians had the French behind them, mm-hmm. and thought that England thought they'd be battling France rather than America for control of the American colonies that were so small and insignificant according to the English.
Right. So I thought, what the heck? Let's listen to a reading of the document. Most people don't read it. These are the great lines that started it. But after that, and this will take 10 minutes, folks, but don't tune out here. Turn up the radio. Invite your friends over quick. This is read by former TV anchorman in the Chicago area and very famous narrator of many programs. And I think he is the scorekeeper at Wait, Don't Tell Me Now on PBS every Saturday morning. Bill Curtis. Very famous, as he calls himself, a legend, humorously, of course. So this is the Declaration of Independence, as read by Bill Curtis. WHFR.FM, the station, making waves.
The Declaration of Independence. In Congress. July 4th, 1776, the unanimous declaration of the 13 United States of America. When, in the course of human events, it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another, and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them, a decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. That whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it, and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles, and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Prudence, indeed, will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes. And accordingly, all experience hath shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations, pursuing invariably the same object, evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security. Such has been the patient sufferance of these colonies, and such is now the necessity which constrains them to alter their former systems of government. The history of the present King of Great Britain is a history of repeated injuries and usurpations, all having in direct object the establishment of an absolute tyranny over these states. To prove this, let facts be submitted to a candid world. He has refused his assent to laws, the most wholesome and necessary for the public good. He has forbidden his governors to pass laws of immediate and pressing importance, unless suspended in their operation till his assent should be obtained, and, when so suspended, he has utterly neglected to attend to them. He has refused to pass other laws for the accommodation of large districts of people, unless those people would relinquish the right of representation in the legislature, a right inestimable to them, and formidable to tyrants only. He has called together legislative bodies at places unusual, uncomfortable, and distant from the depository of their public records for the sole purpose of fatiguing them into compliance with his measures. He has dissolved representative houses repeatedly for opposing, with manly firmness, his invasions on the rights of the people. He has refused for a long time, after such disillusions, to cause others to be elected, whereby the legislative powers, incapable of annihilation, have returned to the people at large for their exercise, the state remaining, in the meantime, exposed to all the dangers of invasion from without and convulsions within. He has endeavored to prevent the population of these states for that purpose, obstructing the laws for naturalization of foreigners, refusing to pass others to encourage their migration hither, and raising the conditions of new appropriations of lands. He has obstructed the administration of justice by refusing his assent to laws for establishing judiciary powers. He has made judges dependent on his will alone for the tenure of their offices and the amount and payment of their salaries. He has erected a multitude of new offices and sent hither swarms of officers to harass our people and eat out their substance. He has kept among us, in times of peace, standing armies, without the consent of our legislature. He has affected to render the military independent of and superior to civil power. He has combined with others to subject us to a jurisdiction foreign to our Constitution and unacknowledged by our laws, giving his assent to their acts of pretended legislation. For quartering large bodies of armed troops among us, for protecting them by mock trial from punishment for any murders which they should commit on the inhabitants of these states, for cutting off our trade with all parts of the world, for imposing taxes on us without our consent, for depriving us, in many cases, of the benefits of trial by jury, for transporting us beyond seas to be tried for pretended offenses, for abolishing the free system of English laws in a neighboring province, establishing therein an arbitrary government, and enlarging its boundaries so as to render it at once an example and fit instrument for introducing the same absolute rule in these colonies, for taking away our charters, abolishing our most valuable laws, and altering fundamentally the forms of our governments, for suspending our own legislatures and declaring themselves invested with power to legislate for us in all cases whatsoever. He has abdicated government here by declaring us out of his protection and waging war against us. He has plundered our seas, ravaged our coasts, burned our towns, and destroyed the lives of our people. He is, at this time, transporting large armies of foreign mercenaries to complete the works of death, desolation, and tyranny already begun with circumstances of cruelty and perfidy scarcely paralleled in the most barbarous ages, and totally unworthy the head of a civilized nation. He has constrained our fellow citizens, taken captive on the high seas, to bear arms against their country, to become the executioners of their friends and brethren, or to fall themselves by their hands. He has excited domestic insurrection amongst us, and has endeavored to bring on the inhabitants of our frontiers, the merciless Indian savages, whose known rule of warfare is undistinguished destruction of all ages, sexes, and conditions. In every stage of these oppressions, we have petitioned for redress in the most humble terms. Our repeated petitions have been answered only by repeated injury. A prince whose character is thus marked by every act which may define a tyrant is unfit to be the ruler of a free people. Nor have we been wanting in attention to our British brethren. We have warned them, from time to time, of attempts by their legislature to extend an unwarrantable jurisdiction over us. We have reminded them of the circumstances of our emigration and settlement here. We have appealed to their native justice and magnanimity, and we have conjured them, by the ties of our common kindred, to disavow these usurpations which would inevitably interrupt our connections and correspondence. They too have been deaf to the voice of justice and consanguinity. We must, therefore, acquiesce in the necessity which denounces our separation, and hold them as we hold the rest of mankind, enemies in war, in peace, friends. We, therefore, the representatives of the United States of America, in General Congress assembled, appealing to the Supreme Judge of the world for the rectitude of our intentions, do, in the name and by the authority of the good people of these colonies, solemnly publish and declare that these United Colonies are, and of right ought to be, free and independent states, that they are absolved from all allegiance to the British Crown, and that all political connection between them and the state of Great Britain is, and ought to be, totally dissolved, and that, as free and independent states, they have full power to levy war, conclude peace, contract alliances, establish commerce, and to do all other acts and things which independent states may of right do. And for the support of this declaration, with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor.
So this is WHFR.FM, the station making waves. There we did it. So radical. We played that revolutionary statement that everybody sees as just, well, it's a basis of our country. That's not radical. Well, in those days it was. It was revolutionary. It was something that they all could have got killed individually for signing, those 56 representatives of ours from the Continental Congress. And yet they did it. And yes, we did have a battle. But at least it was one that wasn't quite as strange to me as the so-called, as they say in the South, the war between the states, or as we call it, the Civil War up north here. And we have a comment about the Confederate flag that we want to mention from Craig Ferrand a little later in the show. But let's talk about all those festivals and where things are happening right now. First of all, as has been tradition for quite a few years now, you can enjoy the sounds and sights of America during the Salute to America concerts at Greenfield Village. The family-friendly 4th of July celebration kicks off July 1st, so it's already started every night, and I can attest to that because I hear the explosions from my house in Dearborn. Well, anyway, it continues through July 4th. So just it's over Saturday night, folks. The gates open at 6 p.m. and the music starts at 8:30 p.m. Each evening will begin with a patriotic concert led by the Michelle Merrill, the Detroit Symphony Orchestra's assistant conductor. The orchestra will play favorites such as, and you might guess some of these, the Star-Spangled Banner, Armed Forces Salute, and the Battle Hymn of the Republic, and many others. Guests will also be treated to songs from Star Wars. And they wrote the story as saying, Start Wars. So, yay, Start Wars.
No.
The Incredibles, which I think I liked, an animated movie by Disney. And, of course, the main theme to the first Superman series. Always powerful.
Very good. Yep.
And cannons will accompany Tchaikovsky's 1812 Overture, followed by a finale of fireworks. So, boom, boom. That's what I say. That's my comment. Visitors should bring blankets, lawn chairs, and a picnic and be prepared to have an entertaining evening. Guess they don't sell food or beverages themselves. I don't know. You would think they could make some extra money on that, but it doesn't say they will. I think I went through that once, and it was just too loud for me. It's too loud for me 3 miles away at my house, but it was just too loud. That is the fireworks. It's not the fireworks. The fireworks aren't loud, but the fireworks that go boom are way too loud. Okay, and they go on way too long. That's my humble Scroogey-type comment there. Before the DSO concert begins, the 1st Michigan Colonial Fire and Drum Corps. I thought it was Fife and Drum.
Fife and Drum.
Well, we got another typo there.
Yeah.
So, unless maybe they're bringing torches with them or something. And you know, they hold the torch in one hand and play the drum with the other hand. I don't know. They're going to parade to the concert grounds at 6:45 p.m. After the parade, see, you're going to get these kinds of typo errors a lot more because they don't have professional full-time people doing the papers. They just trust spell check.
Oh.
So spell check says, yeah, fire, that's a word.
That's a word.
Yeah, that's a word. Yep. What the heck? Sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And just not the right word in that situation. Okay. So spell checks don't know grammar usually, nor what word you really intended to say. The Army Field Band will also join the DSO for its musical program. And so this is going to be a big deal. And, of course, there's a cost. Prices range all the way from $13.25 a person to $75. Mm. That's right in front of the cannon, I think. I bet. Get the full boom if you want that. Wear earplugs or something, folks. That's what I suggest. But you can purchase those from the Henry Ford in advance or online at thehenryford.org/salute. Salute. S-A-L-U-T-E. But we have other places you can go to party.
I have one. I
go,
can
John.
One here, right here.
Yeah.
We have a Wyandotte Parade on the 4th of July from 10 a.m. to noon. That goes from Fort and Biddle to Eureka. And after you go to that parade, you can then hustle over to Trenton, where there'll be fireworks at dusk at Rotary Park. And it's billed as one of Michigan's biggest fireworks displays, as well as an 8 o'clock p.m. patriotic concert by the Downriver Community Band.
Ah, so there's not much happening until 8 o'clock or so at the park.
Correct.
In Trenton. Okay. Right. I noticed that Gibraltar also competes. They have a 4th of July festival, fireworks at 10:02 p.m.
10:02.
So check your watches, folks. Not 10:01, not 10:03, but 10:02. That's what it says here. They got to do it now. And it's going to happen, and this is so quaint for Gibraltar. It's behind the Parsons Elementary School, 14473 Middle Gibraltar Road. Yes. Isn't it cute? It's behind an elementary school.
Right.
Hey, let's just come to the lot behind the elementary school. It's the biggest lot we got in Gibraltar, so I don't know, making fun. I used to live in Flat Rock, so I think I can make fun of Gibraltar. We always used to, anyway. But moving on Sunday, there is a concert on the Commons,
yep,
on Grosse Isle down there. And I know you were going to say that next. Barry Van Engelen, 7 to 8 p.m. at the gazebo on Grosse Isle. On Monday, Trenton's summer concert series continues. So if you're having a four-day weekend, including Monday, a lot of places are closed on Monday. For example, Henry Ford College is having no classes Monday. And the reason for that is since we don't have any classes on Friday, the teachers wanted a day off.
Oh.
So so you'd think they would get a head start by having no classes. But see, no classes anyway on Friday, so they don't get a holiday unless you give them an extra day off. Anyway, so I know that we don't have any regular classes here on Monday. I think the whole college is closed on July the 6th. Of course, it's technically closed today. I don't even know if the admissions office is open today. They may be. They're in a different building called the Welcome Center, just north of our main parking lot here. And
I know for a fact that they're not open today.
Okay.
Because I was called earlier, and I actually spoke with a lady named Kathy Fox, who was I spoke with her on her cell phone, and she said, nope, nobody's there today.
All right. So that's the definitive word. We give you the definitive word here until we find out that it's wrong. yes. As far as we know, yes. Okay, and let's see. Wyandotte Street Art Fair starts next week. That's July 8th to 11th. That's going through next Saturday. And, of course, we want to talk. Now we're at next weekend. We have to talk about Concert of Colors, okay? Because WHFR, you might have heard some of our announcements that play during our shows now. They're what we call must-plays here, so you get the word out. First of all, there are several concerts at the this coming week. I think one is this Saturday even, somewhere in Detroit, sort of a kickoff concert for Concert of Colors. But the biggest number of concerts at one time, anyway, is going to be next weekend, July 11th and 12th, at the Max M. Fisher Concert Music Center. And that, of course, includes their large auditorium, which is referred to as Orchestra Hall, because the Detroit Symphony Orchestra, when they're not at Greenfield Village, is playing there. Okay? And big, beautiful auditorium. And that's where one-third of the performances are happening. that weekend. The other indoor auditorium is called the Music Box, which is renamed the Diversity Stage. And WHFR, yes, we are going to be there. We are going to be there broadcasting live on Saturday and Sunday, all the music performances, technology permitting, from the Diversity Stage. And it's a great free concert. Now, there's also a third stage outside, and the weather's getting better every day. That's what they tell me. It has to, right? So much rain in the last 3 months. Oh, my gosh. Well, anyway, the outdoor stage is a great collection of artists starting about 1 o'clock and going to 9 or 10 at night. Indoors, music starts about 2 o'clock or so and goes till about 10 o'clock at night in both stages. So you get a lot of choices. And there's nonprofit organization vendors there from various groups talking to you about what's going on and maybe selling some of their wares. There's some vendors who usually have jewelry and clothing. And there's food vendors, both outside and inside. In one of the large rooms, there's usually two caterers, in fact, two different tables to choose from, and very reasonable prices for food. But the concerts are free, and especially in Diversity Stage, there's a big dance floor.
Oh, yeah.
So you can actually go and bounce up and down and twirl around. No partner needed, by the way, to all the wild and crazy music in there, and all from alternative artists, you know, people who are not necessarily in the mainstream here, but are great, and either from other places from around the world, or local artists who haven't been playing recently anywhere, or don't have a national contract right now. And one thing I wanted to mention, and John brought in the little insert from the Free Press, which is a Thursday edition sort of thing, and it's wrong about the big performance at Concert Colors. It says that the Don Was All-Star Tribute to the Electrifying Mojo this year. That's the tribute this year. Those tributes have always been on Saturday nights, the Saturday night in Orchestra Hall. This year, and I got this from many justified sources, including ConcertColors.com, their own website, it's going to be on Sunday night. It's Sunday night, 8 p.m. So if you say, well, let's go see that Don Was tribute to Electrifying Mojo. And it's got a lot of great indie artists in there performing, too. Person who's won Songwriter of the Year for many years, in fact, Carolyn Strejo, is performing as just one of those tribute artists. And she's performed here at WHFR in the Motor Live Drive show and really fantastic, talented artist, and been Detroit-based all her life, and she has CDs out, and has many CDs out over the years, but really never gotten the national attention she needed. So she's just one of about 15 or 20 artists that will be performing Sunday night the 12th on Orchestra Hall at 8 p.m. And as I said, we're going to be broadcasting live the performances from the Diversity Stage over WHFR. But, you know, get down there. Experience it. It's fantastic. Everything, indoors, outdoors, there's stuff for kids. Sunday afternoon, there's even a rock group called Playdate for kids at 2 o'clock in the Diversity Stage. We're going to broadcast it, but I'm sure it's a lot more fun if you are down there watching it.
Yes.
I'm going to try to get my granddaughter down there to take that one in.
Jay, our broadcast times on Saturday and Sunday are what?
Well, we follow the performances from down there. So it'll be approximately 2 o'clock. Whenever they're ready to play, they go for about an hour to an hour and a half, and then there's a break of about an hour in between where they set up for the next group, and we'll come back to the studio for that. So three, four performances a day from 2 o'clock to after 10 o'clock at night. It'll finish up both nights. So they will be inserted in our regular shows.
Right.
Our DJs are going to be in the studio here to... And we have to send it back to the studio whenever we are between acts down there. And we'll also have an information table giving out some WHFR stuff in the lobby, in the atrium, as they call it, the fancy lobby. And remember, if it is a really hot day, that Max M. Fisher Music Center is cool inside. It's a luxurious, cool building. And as I said, there's even food inside.
Lots of cool drinks as well.
And good, secure parking all around there. Yeah, some of the lots might charge you, I don't know, $4 or $5 to park for the day. But it's very good parking all around that area. It's on Woodward Avenue, about what would I say, 2 or 3 miles north of 94 and Woodward.
Comerica, that area too. Yep.
Right. Yep. Yeah. Comerica. Yeah. Oh, definitely is north of
Park,
there.
About
yeah.
5 miles north.
Yeah. It's a little bit. Yeah. It's not two or three, but it's at 5 or 6 miles north. Yep. So anyway, look it up. It is Orchestra Hall, but probably you can find it easier if you're going to do a Google search or something. Just say, where is the Detroit Symphony Orchestra facility? Mm-hmm. And that is the Maxim Fischer Music Center. But if you just ask about the DSO, then you probably, on your little search engine or your little phone or whatever, you'll see the location there. It's just as a few miles north of I-94 and Woodward. Okay. And we're going to be there. I'm so excited. It's one of the best music experiences I have each year, listening to live music. Of course, I don't get out much, so I miss a lot of live music around, I'm sorry to say. But this is something that we're going to be part of, and it really is great. So if you haven't experienced that, last year it was during the 4th of July weekend.
Yep.
So their attendance wasn't quite as much as it had been in the past, because most people usually go out of town during 4th of July weekend. So they did get it back to the week after the 4th of July for the big Maxim Fischer Music Center Concert of Colors performance. So come on down there with us. If you got to, you can listen online to WHFR. But it's so much fun. Come on down, be part of Concert of Colors, which is, by the way, primarily administered by the Arab American National Museum. Mm-hmm. Did start with Access, and then when Arab American National Museum got set up, they decided to transfer most of the concert series and music-related events to the museum staff. So they dumped that on them to handle from then on. And it's the 10th anniversary of the Arab American National Museum in Dearborn, so it's a big year for them, and they'll be down there, and I think you can buy some T-shirts from them and so on.
It's a big year for us with our 30 mm-hmm. years
oh, yeah.
in business, and of course we want to invite you to our information table to not only look at our wares, but possibly join our folks.
Yeah,
and we have special of our personalities.
30th anniversary stickers too. Oh my goodness, yes. You can't have too many of those. I think we might even have some 30th anniversary magnets that kind of cool. Put on the refrigerator, stare at it every day, and understand what non-commercial educational radio is all about. By the way, John and I here at WHFR.FM, the new WHFR Journal, are live today. Most of our volunteers are here live this weekend. Certain other non-commercial shows on FM radio in Detroit are all pre-recorded this weekend. I won't mention any names of major stations that are taking even Friday the 3rd off, and everybody needs a vacation, but not volunteers.
Not volunteers.
No, we have nothing better to do but to, well, serve you. Okay, getting back to the news then. Let's get going here. Most of the events are out of the way, I think. Okay. Dearborn Times Herald for this week hit a big story, and I don't know why it's not in the press and guide. Maybe they didn't have a reporter to send to the last city council meeting, or maybe it'll be in the Sunday's paper. I don't know. I went to their website. Usually the Sunday paper stories are in there on Friday morning already at pressandguide.com. This wasn't. Get this. The Dearborn City Council is exploring a new ordinance that would ban smoking in city parks. Now, they're just exploring it, right? So the council further discussed the proposed ordinance at its June 23rd meeting. Well, that's a couple of weeks ago. In the proposed ordinance, smoke or smoking is defined as possessing a cigarette. Ooh, you can't even possess a cigarette? Mm-hmm. E-cigarette, cigar, hookah, or pipe that contains tobacco or any other product that is lighted to or burning. So, you know, don't smoke those banana peels. Any way, in any device, okay? It also defines smoke or smoking as lighting a cigarette. So, I mean, this is unbelievable. Can you possess a cigarette? What if it's in your pocket? You need a license for concealed carry of
weapons,
cigarettes.
Yeah.
No, concealed carry of cigarettes, because
right.
It's against the law if they pass this. So, of course, you can't light it. You can't smoke it. You can't carry it, possess it. Park where the ordinance will be enforced include any public park, recreation, playground area, building, or facility in the city. So it's indoors as well as out. I guess. Quote here, this ordinance is being based on public health concerns, and we are seeing this sort of rule being put in place more frequently across the state and country. That's a statement from Council President Susan DeBaggia. She said, I was hoping we could designate an area for smokers, but we couldn't agree on that exception. As you know, Henry Ford College, WHFR, U of M Dearborn, all have smoking banned on campus, outdoors, indoors. The only place we can't ban it is in private cars parked on our campus. That, for some reason, that is your own legal domain, and you can smoke yourself silly. Just don't inhale.
Yeah.
No, you have to inhale, I think. Maybe not. And keep those windows rolled up. No, there's no rule about that. You don't have to keep the windows rolled up, but that could be a problem if you have a smoke bomb or something goes off. And so that is spreading. And it says, if the interest is in public health, we have, continued on page 8. I know listeners hate it when I say that, but that's what I got to do. I got to turn the page here, folks. What am I supposed to just have silence? And then you tuned another station thinking that we went off the air or something? No, I got to tell you that I'm turning the page. Okay. We want to be constant across the board, said Councilman Michael Cerini. Thank you, Michael, for that. Unless it's a typo, it doesn't make any sense. We want to be constant. I think the word is consistent.
Consistent.
Yeah, there we go again. A person, thank you. John and I will figure out the correct word and insert it as needed here. A person who violates the possible ordinance will be cited with a violation if he or she refuses to stop smoking when requested to do so by a police or ordinance officer. And how much is it going to cost the city to have ordinance or police officers roaming around? We just get some volunteers that agree to do it. We sort of deputize them, and they get a percentage of every ticket or something. I mean, that'll be impossible, because they'll go crazy. I want to frisk you down. If you got a, is that a cigarette in your pocket, or are you just happy to see me? You know, bad joke. Okay, a violation will result in a civil infraction punishable by a fine of $25 or court ordered community service. They make you clean up the parks, pick up all the cigarette packs and cigarette butts for the people that aren't following the rules. And it says enforcement will include somebody calling a non-emergency phone number to report smoking in a park and periodic checks when a police officer is on patrol in the area, said Mayor O'Reilly. There will be new signs posted as well. I get this, though. Camp Dearborn is not included in the ordinance because it is in Milford Township. Now, wait a minute, folks. Wait a minute. What difference does that make? If it's because Camp Dearborn is huge, it would take a billion smokers. Maybe I'm exaggerating. It would take quite a few people to get a heavy cloud of smoke going there because it's pretty well spread out. But they don't mention why. It's in Milford Township. What, are they pro-smoking in the township?
But we can't control what Milford does from Dearborn, apparently.
Well, maybe that's it. Even though we own the land.
Right.
They control the smoking rules.
They control what happens on the
land. Yeah, yeah. And right now, that's why people are moving to Milford, I bet. So they can smoke wherever they want to. And, of course, it's not good for your health, folks. I mean, come on. We know at WHFR, all broadcasters ourselves, it's not good for our lungs. Okay? And although I do know that some of the more famous gravelly voice announcers from olden days, that their voice was gravelly because of all the smoking they did off air. Yeah. Didn't hear them usually puffing on the air. So, but that's something you want to give some feedback to Susan DeBaggia or Mayor O'Reilly. Yes, I understand the indoor situation. The outdoor situation, I guess I just don't understand that real well. Even though here at the college, you know, we have a lot of little courtyard areas and small areas, so we're not real spread out. So, but, I mean, is it one step away from banning it on your personal property in the city, too? You can't smoke outdoors? And, you know, and I mean, I think that is a personal choice if you want to ruin your lungs. And, you know, my father died of lung cancer, and he was a four-pack-a-day guy until 1 year before he died. Of course, he died in his 60s. So you might say, well, he had a pretty good life. All that smoking didn't catch up until He was pretty old. Well, right now, I'm 8 years older than he is. Wow. And maybe because I didn't smoke. I don't know. Or just was darn lucky. In any event, you know, I've seen what lung cancer can do to you, and it's not a fun way to go, folks. Anyway, don't make
it
negative
here.
I have also,
yes, and it's not a pretty sight.
No. Okay, moving on then. Just how much do you want government to do for you? That question keeps coming up and up, and on the 4th of July, maybe you want to talk about that with your friends and what the Declaration of Independence really means to you. Moving on here, the school board also in the Times Herald this week, and interesting, it's not in the press and guide this week so far. Maybe it'll be there Sunday. But the whole story about the last meeting of the Dearborn Public Schools. They've approved their new budget for next year now, $187 million. And just so you know, the overall budget is about $600,000 larger than the initial budget originally proposed for the year. Which doesn't make sense because it said the initial budget was $181 million. Well, $600,000 doesn't bump it to $187. That would be $6 million larger. I can add 6 and 181 is 187. So there's a little typo. I'm not saying it's the writer's fault, but who edits this stuff?
Yeah.
I mean, does no one edit it? They just send it to a computer that just throws it on the page? Anyway, overall the budget is larger, but it's a big budget, and there is more money, a little bit more money from the state, and that's all good. The news that relates to that, I don't think there's anything shocking going on there, is that we're short one school board member. Amy Scholes has been on the board for quite a while. She has just resigned, and I just got this as an email from Dearborn Public Schools. She has got a job now in Ohio, I guess, a new position down there about 75 miles away. And so she and her family are moving down there. Okay. And of course, trustees must live in the district in order to be a member of the board. Of course, she's been a veteran 15 years on the board. Most of the time under a different name. then she got a divorce and got a new name. And what an interesting here, oh, I hate to gossip. It doesn't say that her husband is going with her. It does say her family is going with her. So that's really nice if he's following his wife's job.
Yes.
Especially if she's supporting him. That's really nice. I don't know what's happening. But, you know, if you both got careers and one person gets a great opportunity in a nice place, then the other person, what should they do? You know, I mean, what are they going to do? I mean, they give up their career. Can they get a similar career eventually in that other location? Perhaps. That's really tough. I know people in Dearborn here, they lived apart for quite a while. In this case, I was thinking of the one family is the husband couldn't find. It was an engineer who took early retirement from Ford, and then Ford didn't pay him for a year and a half.
Oh.
It didn't start the payments for a year and a half, and then of course it wasn't enough for. It was just sort of a lump sum payment thing too. So by the time the payments started, way beyond what Ford had promised, they were already out of money and deeply in debt.
Oh.
So when they got the settlement, so called the retirement settlement, it barely paid for their debt, and then they had no income. But he was a big-time mechanical engineer. I mean, that's a really good engineering job. And I think about a dozen years at Ford or something. Couldn't get a job in the Detroit area at all. Okay, this was near 2008, you know, downtime for the economy. But finally, he was able to get a position in Indiana. But it's a big deal to move a family and sell a house. Excuse me, which is below market value anyway in those days. And they finally were able to do it, so they joined together. So it's a real challenge, and good luck, Amy. Thank you for years of service. You gave us a nice interview here when you first joined, I know, on the journal. And it is a job that, being a board member, that doesn't get enough attention or thanks. So thank you anyway, and good luck. But how are they getting a new person? Well, the current board members are just picking someone. So, okay. Anyone living in the Dearborn School District can apply for the vacant seat. Applications will be accepted from July 1st. Already started, folks. They sent the press release yesterday. But they're already accepting applications the day before. Who found out about this? The friends of Amy Solis and the other board members through July 9th. So we have through next Thursday.
July 1st, 2 days ago, actually.
Yeah, 2 days ago. Yep. But the press release came out yesterday by email. Those interested should hand deliver. You heard about that? Hand deliver. Or send a letter of interest, resume, and 3 references to the Dearborn Public Schools Administration Building on Audette. Room 6, Dearborn, Michigan, 48124. You can probably call the Dearborn Public Schools if you want that information if you're interested in serving. No, they're not taking from former candidates. We had a big election a year or two ago, whatever it was, for board members, and a lot of people didn't get into the finals, into the final victory circle. But they're not doing that. They're letting the present board members fill the seat once they look at the people that put their application in. So if you live in Dearborn and you want to apply to be on the Board of Education, which also means you're going to be on the Henry Ford College Board of Trustees, yep, you got to do 2 jobs for the money, and there's not much money, so don't do it for that reason. The applicants selected will serve until the next general election in November 2016. But of course, if you are selected and you start doing or saying things that get you in the papers, if they spell your name right, then that will help your reelection. You're already an incumbent, as they say. You know something about it, theoretically. Yeah. Okay, moving on. About 10 minutes to go. Ah, yes. The Henry Ford College Big Band is going to be touring Italy and France and performing over there. From this coming Monday through July 16th. They're going to have a send-off rehearsal this Sunday, which is 2 days from now, in F110. That's not the big Mackenzie Fine Arts Center auditorium. It's not the Adre Auditorium, but it's just down the hall. It's a nice-sized room. So if you'd like to go and listen to our great jazz band, it's, I believe, a free concert. I think they're practicing, actually. but they're going to some great places, some great jazz fest. Rick Goward, I've known for years, head of the Performing Arts Department when I was there. He is founder and director of the band. Well, he's not founder of the band, per se. There have been many band leaders before. Rick, no disservice. But Rick is continuing the tradition of taking the band, as he has several times already, many times already, to Europe to play at great festivals. This time they're going to play at the Umbria Jazz Festival. And he says, this time, by playing there, we will now have performed at all of the largest jazz festivals in the world. Ta-da! Good for you. And I'm sure it'll be great experience for the people. And you say, well, who's paying for that? The college? Or no, the students raise the money through concerts and performances and put up some of the money themselves. If you wanted to donate to help defray the cost of the band, you can contact Rick Goward by email. Pretty simple. rgoward, rgoward at hfcc.edu. Or just come by Sunday and maybe they have a donation bucket or something. Again, this Sunday from 6 to 8 p.m., room F110 at the Mackenzie Fine Arts Center on the main campus of Henry Ford College. But that's going to be a great, exciting time for them. And well-deserved. They're a great band. Also, just briefly mention that former Press and Guide cartoonist Dan Saad, S-A-A-D, don't say sad, because he's smiling here in the picture. He won recognition from the International Association of Business Communicators Detroit chapter as Communicator of the Year. Woo, whoop-de-doo, June 24th. And, of course, you've seen his cartoons in the Press and Guide for a long time. It's interesting, I don't think the current cartoon is in the Dearborn edition of the Press and Guide, which isn't, you know, a News Herald newspaper. And with only 5 minutes to go, let's move to that. First of all, yeah, thank you, John. John is moving away from the microphone now in order to help our next DJ to come into the station. Our closed building is a little bit of a challenge. And Joanne Kerchenska will be here. Yep, Highway 61, a four-hour ride down Highway 61, the best in the blues, coming up at 2 o'clock or shortly thereafter. So here is Mr. Saad's commentary cartoon. He has drawn his cartoon version of the top part of the Declaration of Independence, and also a smidgen of the signatures, including John Hancock's. And underneath, he wrote in a quote from Thomas Jefferson: "I would rather be exposed to the inconveniences attending too much liberty than those attending too small a degree of it." That is one of the great quotes of Thomas Jefferson, and I totally agree. I'd rather have too much liberty than too little. Think about that one. And again, we're not talking about freedom. Freedom is a pretty general and vague issue. Can apply to a lot of things, a lot of different ways. We're talking about liberties. Okay? Look up the difference sometime. I won't lecture about it here, because we're coming to the end of the show, so what the heck. Of course, Craig Ferrand, who I did not see his big editorial in the Press and Guide this week, but here it is, provided by John Conroy for me, from the Downriver edition. Supreme Court ruling fulfills 4th of July promise. So, hello, Downriver, he says. Call it poetic, call it political, call it great theater, call it perfect timing. The U.S. Supreme Court's announcement of its ruling on same-sex marriage a week and a day before the 4th of July is all of that. And it's one more thing. The final piece of the puzzle that completes the promise found in the Declaration of Independence. There you go. You can read it for yourself. It's long, but it's a beautiful statement. And I personally, my opinion, totally agree with the way he puts it. And, you know, the opinions expressed on this show, the new WHFR Journal, every Friday from 1 to 2, or on our podcast anytime after broadcast, we archive the show. You can listen anytime from WHFR.fm. Just click on Talk Shows, then WHFR Journal, and select the date, which Friday you want to listen to. And there it is. Download it or just listen to it directly at that time. But his 100 words or less comment, Greg Ferrand again, says, "Since I was young, I've wondered about the Confederate flag. They lost, so the flag should be in a museum. Besides, I thought, since the flag represented a false states' rights argument that protected slavery, wasn't its use simply a way to continue driving a wedge between the races, an excuse to discriminate? Germany certainly realized the divisiveness of imagery. The Nazi swastika is now universally banned in Germany. The mass murders of 9 people in a church finally has the rest of our country asking the question I did more than 50 years ago. Ban its display, except in a museum." That's the opinion of Craig Ferrand. Remember Dearborn fireworks laws as we get into the weekend. Basically, it is in regard to the 4th of July, major holiday coming up. You can have personal fireworks that you set off on your property on the day before, the day of, and the day after. So that means today, tonight, tomorrow, and Sunday. Okay? That's what Dearborn Fireworks allows. If you see somebody causing a problem, doing something dangerous, then by all means, you can certainly contact the Dearborn Police, 943-3030. But if it's an immediate dangerous problem, just use 911, okay? But if there's suspicious activity or something you think that might become dangerous, go ahead and call them. They have a little story in the paper here, too. It says, call us. That number just for suspicious activity is 943-313-943-3030. But if it's an immediate danger or problem, 911, of course. All right. And also something from the NRA. Oh, my goodness. National Rifle Association. Hang on. I'm going to grab it here. It's here somewhere. Okay. As of July 1st, a new air gun reclassification package goes into effect in Michigan. Okay, it was passed in May by our legislature. Number of changes directly impacting avid air gun enthusiasts, occasional plinkers, and sportsmen. It's important to understand the changes because it's not, you can do anything you want to with them. Okay, so most of the major air gun retailers and manufacturers will begin receiving and shipping orders to Michigan residents. So Michigan law now differentiates between air guns and firearms. The legal barriers, which previously made it difficult to sell or ship many popular air guns to Michigan residents, have been lifted. So mail order is possible now. So competitive pricing, too, probably. The Michigan Department of Natural Resources will now have authority to implement regulations allowing for the use of air guns for hunting purposes. So you need to check DNR regulations annually. They have regulations about minimum caliber or foot per second requirements regarding the use of air guns for hunting. Know that the law regarding transportation of air guns will remain subject to Michigan's casing requirements. Any air gun that is being transported in a motor vehicle and is designed to shoot metallic BBs or pellets greater than .177 caliber, that's the usual one that most people... If you're just having quote-unquote fun with an air gun, the pellet and or the BBs are not larger than that, 1.177. But, and I didn't know this, but apparently you can get them bigger than that, and that's a problem. You can't take them in your car without putting them in a case. In fact, the device has to be need to be 1, taken down, 2, enclosed in a case, 3, carried in the trunk of the car, or 4, inaccessible from the interior of the vehicle. So that's if it's bigger than, greater than .177 caliber. Last but not least, know the law regarding possession of air guns in weapon-free zones. Okay? And for purposes of Michigan's Weapons-Free School Zone Act, air guns will be considered weapons still and will therefore be subject to the same restrictions that apply to firearms. So hope you got that one. Yep. Okay. So that's the, and that's already in effect, but don't go crazy. Air guns can be very dangerous. As I was told when I was young, my grandfather gave me a huge BB rifle because he was a manufacturer working primarily for Daisy Air Rifle Company, which used to be based in Michigan in the 1950s. They got their start here in Michigan. And so since he had a deal with him, he probably got the rifle for free. And so I got all the targets and, was able to set it up indoors in our basement at the time.